Welcome to the 29th Annual Executive War College brought to you by The Dark Report. This year's conference was in beautiful New Orleans, April 30th through May 1st. The title of this presentation is Open Discussion, CLIAC Committee Initiatives Involving Updates to CLIA Regulations, Networking Clinical Labs with Public Health Labs, and More. The presenters are James Crawford, MD, PhD, Professor and Chair Emeritus, Northwell Health, Greenvale, New York, and Gregory Sossaman, MD, Chairman, Department of Pathology and Laboratory Medicine, Ochsner Health System, New Orleans, Louisiana.
So welcome, everyone. I'm Greg Sossaman. I want to introduce myself. Welcome to New Orleans and the Executive War College. I've been coming to this for many years, and I'm happy to be able to present in front of you with my colleague, Dr. Jim Crawford. You want to say anything, Jim? Introduce Jim Crawford. So we're going to be talking today about CLIAC and the CLIAC committee. So just by way of introduction, I was in Bill Maurice's meeting just a minute ago, and some of the things that he mentioned made me think about how regulated we are as a laboratory environment. So I thought about just welcoming this group to the most dangerous part of medicine, right? Because we must be super dangerous because all the things that we use are regulated, the instruments are regulated by the FDA, and all the testing we do is regulated by under CLIA. So we must be really dangerous, right? We're out there, we're cowboys, we're doing all kinds of really dangerous things. But it's really not. It's because we're so important, right? All the decisions and all the information that we put out has huge, huge significance. It's because we're so important that all this attention is paid to us, not because we're cowboys operating in the dark. So I want to introduce, and Jim's going to do kind of color commentary. I'm going to be your play-by-play guy up here. But before I get into this, I wanted to introduce Ren Salerno, who you heard, I hope you heard him speak earlier. So Ren's going to figure prominently in this presentation because I shamelessly took some of this information from both the CLIA website and also from some slides that we used during our work group. So we're going to talk about what's happened with CLIA and modifications that have happened to CLIA, because the CLIA regulations are not static. People believe that this is some monolithic, static, statutory standards and requirements, but they're really not. They've been modified many, many times over the years, and we're going to show you a little bit about that process and go into a little bit of detail about how that works and what you should know about it and expect. Because if we want to regulate as a laboratory environment, and innovate as a lab and our industry, you need to understand what's possible and what can be possible. So just a little bit, CLIA, just to remind you, you should all know what CLIA is. I hope you all do, but we have various backgrounds that come to this meeting. So CLIA is the federal law that regulates laboratory testing on all humans in the United States. So CLIA is the law, and it's under a particular part of the Public Service Act. Then in the Code of Federal Registers are the actual CLIA regulations, though. So really important distinction, Ren, I hope you're proud of me. CLIA regulations is what CLIAC can advise on and we can change. We can't change the law. Congress changes the law. What we can do is CLIAC can advocate and recommend changes that get promulgated through CMS and change the regulations. So that's really what we're talking about. And as you know, CLIA sets the standards and issues certificates for clinical laboratory testing, and CMS is primary responsibility for the operation of the CLIA program. So about CLIAC, CLIAC is the Clinical Laboratory Improvement Advisory Committee, and it was birthed with CLIA. So it's an advisory group, kind of a tri-agency supported by CDC, FDA, and CMS, supported by these entities, makes recommendations directly to HHS. Not those entities directly, but to HHS. And again, they're recommendations. So what we'll talk about is some things that have been recommended and then some things that CMS will take into consideration and maybe make regulatory changes around. Not everything that goes through CLIAC comes to pass, though. And so this is from the CLIA website through the CDC. And as Ren mentioned earlier in his talk, this is a great, great resource for all of you, and I would urge all of you to take a look at this. It has all of the I'm focused here on the kind of the work groups and about CLIAC, and we'll show some of that. But it has, under, if you go under meetings, you can see all of the, not just future meetings and topics, but all the past meetings, in the addendums, all the presentations from all the prior CLIAC meetings. So wonderful resource. So again, this is the CLIAC. CLIAC is the clinical laboratory, this committee, advisory committee, composed of 20 members, including the chair. They meet twice a year, and again, provide recommendations around scientific and technical advice and guidance to the secretary. So today I'm going to focus a little bit on a group that I was part of. I was previously on CLIAC. Dr. Crawford's currently on CLIAC. And serving on CLIAC. These are two-year terms. You can serve a couple of terms. And as part of that, part of my involvement in CLIAC, I served on a work group. So intermittently, there are some issues that need lots of technical expertise and work that needs to happen outside of the 2-day meeting that is CLIAC. And so these work groups are called together. They're supported by the agencies. And they do some really hard work around, you know, specifics of and discussion around some of these very technical aspects. So there are several work groups that have been put together, pulled together, and I was part of the regulatory assessment work group that Ren mentioned earlier in his discussion. So just to go through a couple of things with this, it was co-chaired by Dr. Kim Chapin and myself. You see the report outs that we had report outs in April 2022, November, again in April 23, and November 23. there were probably, though, a dozen meetings in between those, you know, 6-7 hour day long, hour long meetings each day of those. So where we pulled together just a tremendous group of people to go through all these issues. So just wanted to provide a little background. These were not just, you know, 1 or 2 day kind of things where people put forward opinions and made recommendations. These were really substantial work group meetings. So this was the charge for this work group, which was to deliberate on, especially considering previous work groups around personnel regulations, non-traditional workflow, and then the next generation sequencing work group. How do we pull some of these together and make some very specific recommendations to different areas in the CLIA regulations and make those recommendations again to HHS? So just a couple of slides on the background. Dr. Chapin was the CMO at Cepheid, had previous experience with CLIAC. But really an expert in molecular infectious disease medicine. I've been a medical director of a large, highly complex lab here at Ochsner. Was a medical director for many years. I've been involved in lots of different state and national committees and serve as the department chair currently. Dr. Salerno, again, that's a great picture, Ren, serves as director of the Division of Laboratory Systems, or at this point was that, and he is the CLIAC-designated federal official. So he kind of shepherds the CLIAC, in other words. Heather Stang, who really kept us on track and did a tremendous amount of work through this process and is really an expert around laboratory medicine and has many years experience working in the lab herself. Sarah Bennett was another ex officio member of this. She was from CMS and was a great asset in going through some of the areas of what can we do around the regulations, what can CMS do, and where maybe should we direct some of these recommendations. So very, very strong support from, again, tri-agency this way. So these were the work group members, and I list them just so you would know really tremendous expertise in many areas that we went over, informatics with people like Dr. Carter from Emory, Dr. Pantanowitz, experts in genomic medicine, Dr. Kolf, Dr. Funke, just lots of expertise in just many, many areas, Dr. Laser, who you know, Jim, then just different areas of the laboratory, from even regulatory aspect with Denise Driscoll, who's here from CAP, David Chang, who's from the Chief Medical Officer from COLA. So just a wide array of expertise in this group, and we put all these people together to go through all these topics. And again, spent many, many hours. So that's some of the background. pertinent to this out-of-scope discussions were around LDTs. I know that's something that came up very early in our discussions, seemed pertinent to the group, but really kind of out of the scope for the purposes of this this discussion, because that's really more in the realm of, again, that was being discussed by the FDA. And notably, many of these questions that came to the work group were things that either CDC, FDA, or CMS had really questions about, particularly CMS, things that they encountered on surveys, questions from individuals that are under those certificates of compliance from CMS. And so these questions came to the work group. LDTs were not one of those. So we did have to steer pretty sharply away from some of those questions sometimes. So some of the general agreements from the group, and again, so we went through this very methodically with some of these things that we requested to look at. The specific part of CLIA and subpart K, there's an area in the, again, Code of Federal Register, we'll see the number later on, but there's a subpart K that we really went through in just incredible detail. But there had been some prior recommendations made in previous meetings around remote distributive testing that this group reinforced and recodified some of those. And then particularly, I'll mention the CMS State Operations Manual, that there was wide agreement around changing some of the updating the State Operations Manual to include specific terms around performance specifications. So the State Operations Manual is the guide for inspections and guidance that the CMS inspectors use. So that is it would be the equivalent to the, maybe not exactly equivalent, but think of it as the CAP checklist or some of the questions that Joint Commission uses when they inspect your lab. They use the State Operations Manual. And I emphasize that because many of the recommendations that we make are maybe not very specific. CLIAC may not say change this wording. What they will say is update the State Operations Manual to include this concept. And so the group wants to leave it up to CMS so they have enough flexibility that they can use this authority but make changes that make the most sense to that group, if that makes sense. Did I lose anybody with that? So the State Operations Manual gives them, if you make changes to that, gives them the flexibility, in other words.
I might add, as a relative newbie at CLIAC, that Wren has been most kind in curbing my, you know, subversive comments from someone like me, which is, what can you recommend and what can you not? The dialogue between the designated officials and the CLIAC members, certainly from my standpoint, in receiving recommendations from a work group and then formulating formal motions that are voted on have to, number one, stay within the bounds of the statutory authority of CLIAC, but number two, make sure that the receiving entity, quite honestly, operates under its own authority. We can't tell them what to do. We can only recommend the direction that we would like them to go.
That's right. And so, again, there seems like, again, this process can seem monolithic, but it's really not. This is the CLIA has been, again, modified many times over the years, and this is a flexible process. And approaching it this way, we thought gave CMS flexibility to change it in the best, in the way that they thought best. Yeah, go ahead, please.
What degree of effectiveness? Because that would be frustrating. Greg
will address that later.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later. But
The question is, with what degree of effectiveness?
Yeah.
Ren is smiling.
So what can be, though, ineffective is, if you spend, you know, an hour on wordsmithing something very specific and then it goes down the line and they say, well, that just doesn't fit at all with the rest of the process.
It's the idea.
Exactly.
So I won't do a spoiler, but Greg will address that later.
No, that's perfect. Oh, and if there are any questions, please just stop and ask. Happy to entertain any questions along the way. The regulatory piece is of interest to a lot of us, but we know we don't have any illusions that this is the attention-grabbing part of the meeting. So please go ahead and stop if you have questions. No offense, Ren. Sorry. So discussion topics.
It's an acquired taste.
It's an acquired taste. That's right. That's exactly right. So these were the areas that we really came to us, came to the work group as questions, again, from CMS and others. The total testing process, where does it begin, where does it end? Data as a specimen, we talked about that earlier, digital pathology, some specifics on analytic testing specifications. And because, believe it or not, the CLIA regulations have been around for a while, you know, they don't take certain things into account. Next-gen sequencing is not mentioned in CLIA. There's that some of the technology we use is not mentioned here. So how do we modernize that? That's the concept. And then around histopathology is another concept. So this is just a warning for you guys. There's a lot of text in the next slides. I don't intend to go through all of it or read the slides. I may skip a lot of this and you go, well, he didn't mention that. Yes, I didn't. It's all in here. You get a copy of it. I even have an appendix. There's a lot of other slides that I didn't want to cut, but I put in there. A lot of this, though, comes directly from the CLIAC website, which does a much better job of presenting some of this than I could. But that's, again, just apologies beforehand for some of this.
But in my feedback to Greg as we were preparing, I was saying, I sure hope you know how you're going to go through these slides. And his comment was, this is the federal government. You know, the words are there so that in terms of the slide deck is an accurate report of this working committee. It is for Greg to present.
That's right. I'm not paraphrasing from, this is what's listed on the website, and so this is kind of what you get. But again, we're not going through everything. So this was our first, this is actually the second, report. We did a kind of interim report in, before this. That we went through a couple of things, but this was the first one where we made substantive kind of agreements and then recommendations that came out of this. And so, again, these are the areas that we talked about, and there were recommendations that came out of CLIAC around the testing process, data as a specimen, new CLIA certificate type. I've not heard people mention that before, but this was a recommendation that came out of CLIAC, and I'll talk about a couple of these things. So this was the first recommendation. I think this is a really big one. That updating the terminology here that's defined in the code of in CLIA around data derived from human specimens such as imaging, genetic and protein sequences, omics data. So we tried to be very inclusive of what now is considered materials derived from the human body, because that's the language in the law. Right, so we can't change that, but we can define it in the regulatory statutes as what are we really mean when we say materials derived from the human body.
And a sort of a litmus test for the importance of this was the CLIAC meeting just 3 weeks ago, which was, what is a medical director of a laboratory responsible for? This is important. Is a medical director of a laboratory responsible for data as a specimen? Well, if it's going to an outside entity to process it, yes. If there's cybersecurity in the transfer, yes. So this is an important reshaping of our responsibilities,
right,
as providers of laboratory diagnostics.
Reshaping the concept, right. The next definition of the test system, probably many of you are familiar with the test system concept from the FDA regulations, and what is that test system? Because, you know, the FDA approves your hardware, your software, the whole piece, right? So this definition for CLIA needed to include the instrumentation, the equipment, but also software algorithms, data exchange, other kind of components now that are newer that weren't covered in CLIA at the time. So CLIAC recommended, and this was something that had, and Ren mentioned this earlier, this non-enforcement discretion of kind of remote review of laboratory work. Again, when it's done, and you covered it very well earlier, I'm not going to spend too much time on this, but again, when it's under the auspice of a laboratory that already has a CLIA certificate, they're high complexity, they're already doing flow cytometry, or they're doing anatomic pathology, can a pathologist or laboratory professional review that data at a remote site through a secure channel? And that, again, emphasize that that non-enforcement discretion is continues. Now, it hasn't been changed in CLIA, but I think there's a high likelihood that that will be changed in CLIA to kind of reinforce this concept going forward. The group, work group did feel, and CLIAC recommended a new certificate type for any entity manipulating information received from and returned to the clinical laboratory, vis-a-vis a the so-called bioinformatics pipeline. So you have a sequencer, you sequence data, you ship that digital data off to a company that manipulates that data. They're off-site. They're not affiliated with your laboratory. You just buy that service from them. They compare it against the database. They do all of that manipulation of that data and send it back to you. The feeling was, how are they not acting as a laboratory? How are they not changing information derived from a human and creating something new and giving it back to you? So the idea was a new certificate type to cover that activity so it could be regulated the same way we are. And then there was a recommendation around FDA including some controls around self-collection devices. FDA regulates those self-collection devices, but right now there's maybe the pre-analytic piece for those is super important, right? And then if you're a librarian, you assume responsibility of that for when you get to your when it gets to your lab. So ensuring that there's quality quality control, integrity. How do we know this came from a human if we're testing DNA on something we received that's collected at home? So those kind of concepts. So then the meat of the group was around the rest of these pieces, data as a specimen, and then the analytic specimen testing specifications. And then we did a literal line-by-line review of the subpart K. And this is really the meat of a lot of the quality system piece of the CLIA recommendations. And, again, not going to go through all of this, but we're going to skip around and hit a couple of important pieces, I think. So one of the things, and this was a work group conclusion, that they need to address and clarify what do we really mean by the performance improvement process and quality assurance. Those concepts have changed over the years and very much matured, and so there needed to be some definitional changes as to emphasize not just the identification of that, but the evaluation, resolution, and the preventing reoccurrence of that. So really important terminology around that. Again, in subpart K, determined that there needed to be a new standard around electronic data analysis to encompass all the types of data, electronic data that we generate now, and how that's manipulated and how that gets sent back and forth. And then it's some additional requirements around confidentiality of patient information, how that's stored, how it's sent out, and then ensuring that the laboratory has the same regulations and conforms to the same federal laws around HIPAA and security and safety for patients' information. So there's not complete alignment on some of those things, and so there were recommendations on how do we get both of those in sync. And there were some very specific things we looked at. You know, the regulations are written in a specific way. We talk about pre-analytic, analytic, and post-analytic, and that's how we did the work group agreements, and then the recommendations flow kind of the same way. We're not going to go through this, but you can see some of the specificity was around things like updating, remove patient name or unique identifier to include two unique patient identifiers, which we all do nowadays in standard practice. So let's change the language to reflect what we actually do, right? In the analytic systems, again, don't faint. There are a bunch of slides like this. We're going to go quickly through some of these things. But, again, if you have a question, if you see something, hey, what does that mean? You know, please go ahead and ask. But, again, one of the agreements was around updating the analytic system specifications around qualitative and quantitative testing, changing things like remove the reference to textbook. How many of us reference textbooks now in our procedures anymore? You know, this is just modernization and updating some of these things. This was really just, okay, let's get in there and kind of take out the things and really update this like it should have been updated before. Things like let's update, again, qualitative and quantitative. Let's talk about include the reportable range for qualitative test results. Requirement for the reportable qualitative test result as established or verified. So some very specific language, though, that it's very important, again, to go to those individuals who, using the State Operations Manual, to go in and inspect these labs. And remember, the changes that are made in CLIA then are reflected downstream in the other accrediting organizations, right? Post-analytic systems, we talked a minute ago about digital pathology, a remote sign-out piece. defining test report, clarifying how, what that means. So, for instance, if it's released through a patient portal, does that test report have the same requirements that are currently in CLIA? Those kind of things, and clarifying some of this information, again, updating it. Jimmy, did you want to say anything? No, okay. Again, going through some of this stuff very quickly, and we're going to go, these are the actual recommendations. So, again, the process is the work group can't make any recommendations. Many of those members were not, many of those, the work group participants were not CLIAC members. The work group makes no recommendations. CLIAC makes the recommendations. And again, they're only recommendations. Many times, as we just discussed, and the recommendations are carefully worded so CMS and others can do, can use them most effectively. If you hem them in, sometimes it's not as effective, and so sometimes you leave it a little bit vaguer or up to CMS to decide what's the best way to utilize that. So these are all the recommendations, again, listed on the CLIAC website. This group, and Jim was part of this, there were how many? We added them up. How many recommendations?
At the November 2023 meeting on receiving the final report, there were 32 recommendations.
32 recommendations.
It is, if you know, I talk about regulatory and quality being an acquired taste. These are actually high-tension meetings because the deliverable is, are we receiving information, processing it, and then conveying our consideration of those work group recommendations to the entities, CMS, CDC. And it's a high-wire act because although we don't take wordsmithing to the utmost degree, we still have to make sure we're saying what we want to say. And it has to be moderated very well. The responsibility of the chair of CLIAC is very high because 20 people coming up with 32 recommendations is no small accomplishment.
And again, to point out things like on number two, definitions in the CLIA regulations or the CMS state operations manual should be updated to include terms. Again, not so specific that it hems in and prevents them from making the best changes
possible. And we do have to pay attention to syntax. Eats, shoots, and leaves. We have to put the commas in the right place.
Right, that's right.
We've had some instances of that.
So that's these are some of the recommendations. Again, new recommendations. Let me point out, this number six was around confidentiality of patient information. Again, syncing up what's in the HIPAA final rule. Let's keep going for time. This is around another one around include information related to specimens collected outside the laboratory's control. One of the most basic agreements that we had in the total testing process was agreement that the lab's responsibility began when it received the specimen. The lab really has no response or can't have responsibility because it has no authority before it receives the specimen. What we can do is ensure that there are quality, pre-analytic quality checks in place when we do get it to make sure it's not hemolyzed or there's no formalin on it or whatever it happens to be. We can put those processes into place, but there's no really legal authority from CLIA or anyone otherwise for the laboratory to be responsible for before it's collected. Does that make sense? And again, several of these recommendations, updating procedure manual, state operations manual, things like that. Just things that you would think would be in there, a definition of interfering substances. That should be in there. Clarifying, updating terminology around reference intervals. One of the 16 is really important around, again, update the regulations or the operations manual to include new technologies or testing practice for each subspecialty area. If you've looked in CLIA, you see that there's micro in there, there's chemistry, there's all these subspecialty areas. And we really don't know what the next technology is. We wanted to make recommendations that were not technology specific. So don't say next gen sequencing. Talk about the technology in general and update some of this to include the test system definition, again, software algorithms, data, things like that, that are included and specific in each of those different categories, though.
Greg?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Yeah. No, repeat the question.
So Kashra's question was really about, shouldn't lab have some authority to define when you receive a specimen and So say again, if there's a problem with the specimen, should, and so I would couch that as, in the vein of acceptability criteria. Labs can define when they accept a specimen, right? You can define conditions that are that specimens are acceptable or not acceptable, but there, you have limited, again, control and authority outside the laboratory. So if you accept that a specimen, then you assume responsibility for it. You cannot accept it, right?
Okay.
So that would be one piece of it. So, again, the concept, though, is the lab becomes responsible when they accept it, and that's really when it hits the lab's door. So, Jim, you
were saying. But I heard Castro asking a different question, which is, should the lab have influence on having an HbA1c done on an annual basis? No, that's a different place.
Yes.
That is not this place.
Yes. And we did have to stay within the confines of what CLIA regulates. So this
is reactive medicine, Castro.
Yeah.
That's why I said future state.
Future state is not this.
Yeah. Future state was just making this flexible enough to take new concepts, new technology, new instrumentation, new things into consideration. A little bit of future-proofing, as much as you can with, you know, law.
Without having to rewrite the regulations.
Without having to rewrite the regulations, exactly. So the definitions will still work for a while longer.
Repeat the question again, Greg, if you can.
Yeah, I may need to get you to restate that because I'm not sure I understand the question. So you're saying if the data that we generate informs what people do with it, how can we not have our authority or responsibility? Well, I guess the answer really is we don't, within CLIA, again, this has to be all framed within CLIA, the laboratory does not have authority.
One example
before,
I could think of,
before he gets it,
and I'm watching Bren's face here, and which is where the guardrails for CLIAC are very clear and they're statutory. But what I'm thinking as I listen to you, Castro, is if we put in our test report recommended actions or you know guidance, if you want to think of it that way. I don't feel qualified actually to answer that question from a CLIAC standpoint, but that is not this. The CLIAC recommendations are for what CLIA regulations should look like for turning out an accurate test and safe test result, not the use of that test result. Stay within our, and yes, you and I can travel on the highways, you know, in terms of what is then supposed to happen. But it's not here.
Yes, ma'am. So for the recording, I'll say, so the question was around labs that provide collection material to patients, then patients would collect those and send them back into the laboratory. Is not the laboratory then responsible for that? And I would say, yes, it is responsible for, did you provide the right type of swab? Did you provide the right collection media? Those kind of things. And instructions for collection. What the lab can't be responsible for is if you didn't collect the sample on yourself and you collected it on your dog, and we need to have adequate pre-analytic controls in place to take that into account. So the idea was there are variables that happen outside of the laboratory that we can't control, right? So home collection is a different ballgame. So if you provide something to a patient and they come into your laboratory and they collect a specimen in the bathroom there, then you obtain that from the patient directly. It's never really left the lab's control, so to speak. That's a pretty different paradigm than you sent something to patient in the mail and they collected it at home under what kind of conditions, how was it stored, did they leave it sitting around for, you know, 30 days and then send it back to you. So those are the kind of things that the lab can't control. So in that case, you know, maybe you do fit testing by mailers and you send them a kit and they do that collection process at home, and it sits around for 30 days, then they send that back to you. That's something you have to reject, and that would be then the lab responsibility to say, no, we can't accept that because that's outside of what we should accept and responsibility for.
In the, I believe it was the November 2023 discussion, it may have been a year ago in April of 2023, there was extensive CLIAC discussion of engaging the manufacturers of products, including the kits that you may be sending out, to do two things. One is to have embedded controls, human DNA being an example, so that when the lab receives a specimen, it has the ability to assess the quality of the specimen, whatever that might be, including potential temperature monitors that are triggered if the temperature gets outside the acceptable range. The other is the package insert. Is a recommendation from CLIAC that CMS have a relation, you know, a dialogue as CMS sees fit, and it might even involve the FDA, as to what the package insert is for manufacture, so that this is a coordinated system. But again, CLIAC can only make recommendations.
Thank you, Jim. So, in the interest of time, you get the idea with the specificity of the recommendations, right? I don't think I need to go through more of those. Even Ren is nodding at that one. sorry, Ren. So the next work group report out was around histopathology, and I'll just skip to the end. The recommendation was that CMS really needed to update CLIA to recognize sets of technicians, technologists, and pathology assistants as testing personnel and define those educational requirements for those personnel categories just like for every other testing personnel in CLIA, right, and in the laboratory. So kind of getting towards the end here when there's some time for questions. So what happens next with these? Do these recommendations always lead to changes in CLIA? How do we know when these changes will get implemented? What's this process look like? And this is what I put in there. Does CLIA actually evolve? I would say yes, but it's evolution. It's not revolution, right? It's not wiping it out and starting again, because that would be Congress, right? And we're not that. So, and that has its own kind of issues. So this is an example of one of the memorandums that came out from CMS that detailed the publication of this final rule, which was published late last year some of the CLIA fees, histocompatibility, some of the personnel, and probably some of you are aware of around the proposal for award nursing personnel doing high complexity testing. And so this was the input from CLIAC. CLIAC recommended changes to the CLIA personnel regulations found in subpart M, and this was around the nursing personnel and others. And so CMS and CDC finalizing these proposed updates around removing the proposed addition of nursing degree and then revising the language around the laboratory director qualifications. So this is how some of this happens. It comes from CMS. Sometimes CMS, these things go through CMS. Many times the questions go to CLIAC. CLIAC makes recommendations, and then these recommendations go back to CMS, or maybe it's FDA, or maybe it's CDC. Changes then from those recommendations happen, and then they'll go through this regulatory process. So this is one example of how it worked. These CLIA, and this is Jim's slide provided, so thank you, Jim, around. This is kind of a website that you can go and you can see the Code of Federal Register, which is, again, subpart 493 is where these regulations are found. Again, these are the regulations, not the law, the regulations around laboratories. And this is just one example, and you can see down here. And so you can see how many changes this particular piece of the subsection has undergone over the years, 92 and then 95 and then 2003. So, again, an evolutionary.
With the Federal Register volume and page, you can go on the CLIA website and find every single Federal Register amendment.
And so also provided by Dr. Crawford, who went through all of these from 1991 to present day and looked at these are CLIA amendments published in the Federal Register. So what's the impact of CLIAC? Again, these are, you know, not everything goes through CLIAC, but these are CLIAC recommendations made that made it to then changes in CLIA. And so you can see this is a pretty good accomplishment in 2003, where they had 22 recommendations and then another 6 later on. Jim and I again counted up for this last, the work group that I was part of that came through that made recommendations. I think there were 32 or 33.
The last one, and then another 20 some odd in April. So over 50 recommendations formally motioned and passed by CLIAC as a result of receiving this work group's. Is that going to lead to 50 changes in CLIA? No. And I think it would be completely unfair to be looking at one versus the other. What is important is to say, what are the topic areas, and then what will eventuate. And And so this slide was generated after speaking with Greg yesterday at 11 a.m. Eastern time about this meeting today, which was, well, what is the rate of change?
Do you think you're weighted importance? I mean, when you make the representation,
that's, I have not detected that. The energy of the conversation, I think, is reasonable, but I think the most important thing is that the designated federal officials are in the room. And they are there for the conversation, and they take that away.
Yeah.
But what I did do on the plane ride down here or over the bumpy Blue Ridge was the December 28th, 2023, and the July 22, 2022, which is the last two ones, 6 and 5 recommendations. The Federal Register actually says which CLIAC meeting the recommendations were made. And using one example, which was the proficiency test samples for microbiology analytes in 2022, was first discussed at CLIAC in 2016. The public comment was 2019, and the modification to CLIA was 2022. So that's a 6-year incubation, not including the work group that went before it. An example for 2023 was a 2019 CLIAC recommendation, which came out 3 years later. So at least on the basis of N=2 on a plane flight, that's in a bumpy plane flight at that. 3 to 6 years. Is there shorter? I'm sure there is. And moreover, CMS does issue memos. It's not just CLIA. It's
right.
Actual, and it's also what CMS selects not to do, as opposed to what CMS selects to do.
And so maybe there's a better process that we don't want 50 changes to CLIA. Maybe we want 50 changes to the state operations manual. And so we tried to be very careful and deliberative and provide the flexibility. New concepts need to be updated, but provide flexibility so the changes that we need could be made. And I will tell you, I have never, ever, once in any of the CLIAC interactions I've had, had any feeling that Wren, his group, his office, was anything but receptive, wanting to work with all the laboratorians in the room about making necessary changes. But again, it takes a while. Sometimes the aircraft carrier turns a little bit slower. I'll make this analogy. I think this is a very good analogy because you'll notice in this aircraft carrier, look how fast it's turning. Notice there are no planes on the deck. If you had planes on the deck of that ship, they'd all be in the water. So sometimes you have to be careful about how quick you change, right? And again, I start out with a conversation with how important is the job that we do, that we have to be regulated by everybody so closely. You can't change things overnight, and we shouldn't change things overnight. It has to be... We have to be careful about the changes we make, approach it thoughtfully. So what I want to leave you with is CLIAC is that thoughtful, decisive, but careful approach to making the changes that we need. Does it take longer sometimes than we would like? Maybe sometimes. Maybe sometimes that's a good thing, right? So plenty of time for questions. We have a couple of minutes left. Jim, I don't know if you have any other comments, but happy to talk about anything else now.
Well, I just want to express my own appreciation for the opportunity to be part of a federal committee. It's a very meaningful activity. I do believe that anyone who is interested in CLIAC can submit their interest. If you go on the website, there is opportunity to self-nominate. My experience throughout the House of Medicine, as a volunteer, you receive far more than you give. What you learn, the people you get to know. And in a very parochial way, the understanding and knowledge that you bring back to your own institution. It's a very meaningful activity.
I totally agree. It's a very singular experience and incredibly rewarding. So I would recommend it highly, highly to anyone. And I think somebody has a question. Yes, ma'am. Yeah. So the question is around the next step. If a CLIAC recommendation is accepted and goes to HHS, then what happens? Basically, and then how is it promulgated? And that's it. So it would depend on the recommendation, obviously. Who does it go to? Does it go to CMS? Does it go to CDC? Does it go to the FDA? I don't know the exact process. We've heard probably most from CMS, again, at each of the CLIAC meetings, and you can see those on the website. There's always a presentation by one of the designated officials from that organization, and they will talk about things like, these are some of the recommendations that have come from CLIAC, and these are where they are. Now, there's not always a timeline on those things, and sometimes, as Dr. Crawford was just mentioning, there can be multiple years that elapse between when it's first recommended and then changes are made, and I think there's probably very good reason. I don't think as CLIAC members we know exactly what that process is. Again, it can take, I don't know if there's any one way that anything winds through CMS. It could be that it's decided maybe it's better handled by another agency. Maybe this is a more educational aspect to something, and we don't want to have a regulatory change, and really it's just education, and maybe CMS or CDC already has a program around education because it's biosafety, and they have a great new virtual reality biosafety module, and so we're not going to make a regulatory change, or we're not going to make a state operations manual change, but somebody else is best fit. So again, that's where you try to leave some of that flexibility, but exactly how that happens in the CMS organization, I can't really answer that, and I think it's probably because there's no one single way, but I'm sure there is a process, but I can't speak to it.
But I will give you an example of a place you can't go, and that's funding, because in a laboratory workforce discussion, for example, well, there should be this, that, and the other support for pipeline, this, that.
Sure.
No, we can't go there.
Yeah.
That's a different part of the federal government. It's called Congress.
Yeah. And back, gentlemen, back here. Including images. It wasn't limited. I think we were just trying to encompass all kinds of digital information, be it image, be it base pairs translated into binary format, whatever that information had to be. So we didn't talk specifically about that.
I think it's more specific, derived from a human specimen.
Derived from would be that key word. So I guess you could say
an X-ray is not derived from a specimen, whereas...
Well, you should have been part of the work group because that would be good information to... Did we think about that exact idea? I don't think so. Again, very concentrated on the lab piece, but I guess there could be interpretation that way. I doubt there's going to be any kind of inkling that CMS is now going to have purview over, you know, radiology. No. Denise, do you have a question? Oh, I'm sorry. As one of our work group members, I should have recognized you. I'm sorry. Yeah. And so for the recording, the comment was around how even if something comes through the CMS pipeline, there is, in the end, there's coordination with some of the other accrediting organizations on actually how is that really going to happen vis-a-vis the proficiency testing final rule. In 2012 it started, yeah.
Before it ever got to CLIAC. It was just kind of
thought processes. So we all work together. Okay. We're probably out of time.
For the recording.
So CLIAC recommendations, they don't all result in changes to CLIA. Is the opposite true? Do CLIA...
Do all CLIA changes come from CLIAC? And I can answer that question even from the last two federal registers. No. If you read the federal register, the provenance of any decision is given. And the example from the plane ride yesterday was the fee schedule. You know, there was extensive discussion in the Federal Register of CMS's reasoning about adjustments in the fee schedule. That was not a CLIAC discussion.
Okay,
the Federal Register tells all.
Tells all. So again, go to the CLIAC website, and if you'd like to be more involved, send an email to CLIAC. It's a wonderful experience. You will not regret it. And thank all of you for your attention. Appreciate it.
This concludes the presentation. Please visit the Executive War College website for details on the 2025 event.